Welcome to the 37th episode of the Reckless Dice Podcast, where we discuss Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay 3rd Edition. Joining tonight's show, we have Chris Wagner.
Howdy.
Dave Schwartz.
Howdy.
Nate Denny.
Good evening.
And I am Jesse Gitzman Burke. How's everybody doing tonight?
Excellent.
Very good, thank you.
Everybody have a good Thanksgiving?
Yes, full and happy.
Yeah. Turkey leftovers.
Yeah.
We didn't have leftovers this year.
Not much, are you at all? Well, it's been a little while since we've done a formal episode, and what I wanted to do tonight was, since we've just recently finished Mirror of Desire, which Chris just GM'd, I'd love to go through that episode, or that session, slash adventure word thing, and really kind of take a chance to delve into what we missed, what could have gone differently, maybe review the episode and get some thoughts going on it. But before we get into that, let's cover just a little bit of news that's happened regarding Warhammer 3rd Edition in the last couple, in the last month or so. We did finally get the Celestial Magic print-on-demand supplement, which I was just fingering through today. Is that any surprise for anyone?
I was a little surprised that they went there before maybe some of the others, like, I don't know, even Amber first, but I thought it was pretty cool, though.
I think it seemed appropriate because Celestial was one of the orders that was part of the core set, mm-hmm. and all the print-on-demand supplements, with the exception of the Dreadfleet supplement, have all been expansions of the core set mechanics. Not one that I particularly care about, but I was glad to see it. I wasn't expecting a print-on-demand before Enemy Within came out, so that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was nice to see something out there.
Yeah, you get like two item cards and a bunch of spells. Other news, we think, at least, that the Enemy Within is on the boat, which means that it's done, it's finished printing, and it's on its way to stores, or at least on its way to the factory to be, or the shipping facility to be sent to stores, which means we can probably see it by 2015. But it sounds like it's still coming, it's not canceled. They're still going to release that, and if we'll see anything else beyond that, that's maybe still up for debate. I think you guys have sent me some links over the course of the last couple weeks about a lot of Warhammer stuff going on sale online.
Yep.
And a lot of those were alongside other games that were already out of print.
And that is also sort of mirrored past practice.
What do you mean by that?
Meaning that Fantasy Flight has done this in the past, as in, like, hey, let's clear all this stuff out as a big holiday sale so we don't have to store it anymore, and we're done.
Boost the year-end sales?
Yeah.
All right.
But it definitely, you know, it's one of those things that definitely makes you raise an eyebrow, and with the long silence and other things kind of all gathering together, it certainly looks bad.
No, do you think they're going to stop printing stuff for it? I mean, making stuff for it?
If I had to venture a guess, I would say that The Enemy Within is probably the last official box set we'll see.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more print-on-demands still.
We might see a few of those still. Those are cheap. They've said it's
doesn't
cheap
hurt
easy.
Them. Right, it doesn't hurt them. And if they, you know, they sell, that's almost a pure profit center, so...
I guess that makes sense,
They haven't come out right out and said, we're going to stop supporting
them. Nor do I think they really will for quite some time.
No, not unless we hear something like somebody else bought the license or something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, with that then, I mean, they do have all four of the main Chaos Gods out. They have social, martial components out. They have their epic campaign. They have really the full gamut of materials they set out to make. Everybody's going to still, of course, complain that there's no Wood Elves or Elven supplements, but I mean, they've never gotten the attention they needed.
Yeah, and I mean, to be honest, it's like we've in all the different games that I've been playing, both here and another group that I run, we've barely scratched the surface of the careers, and you know, I've got all the old second edition books too, and there's so much more material that we could dive into and still explore with what I've already got, so I'm not sweating them.
Liber Fanatica, and there's the Zweihänder, which is in the works, which is they're hoping to put that out in early 2013, so that should be really interesting when that comes out. So I don't really think Warhammer 3rd edition as we know it might be wrapping up.
Yeah.
What was it, about a 2.5-3 year cycle?
Yeah.
It's a lot of content for that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm kind of sorry to see it slow down, but that's a lot of content.
Yeah, and again, I've got players that are in other games that are you know, barely scratching the surface of what's out there because they're fairly new to it. So it's all new to them, you know.
There you go. That's true. Yeah. Well, with that, then let's hop into a little more positive news. All our characters are now traumatized from playing the Mirror of Desire. We are literally. I think. No. Fair warning. This is a full spoiler episode. We're not going to leave anything off the table here. Nope. So if you haven't played Mirror of Desire, you should probably stop listening now. We're going to talk lots of GM techniques, storyline threads that we missed, all sorts of crazy stuff like that. So I think we literally skipped the entire finale, the formal finale of the mission, didn't we?
No, not in a sense, no, because the
And what I mean by that is we left the house with everybody splayed out on the walls, and then just decided, you know what? We're going to bed.
Yeah, well, and I think that's actually one of the sort of anticipated directions for the ending of the module. It really kind of hangs it out there in terms of, you know, again, as you just said, lots of spoilers here, but the way that the module ends is really open-ended. It gives some thoughts about, you know, if Kalsidra is let out of the mirror, what's her intent? What is she off to go do? Mm-hmm. How long were the characters left unconscious on the floor? You know, and so she's off to go gallivant, and you know, she has an objective and an
agenda
intent.
For revenge.
She has an agenda. She wants to go back and annihilate that family. So that's exactly where I put her. You know, she's in the house.
Aschaffenburg.
She's after the Aschaffenburg because the person who trapped her in the mirror was of that bloodline.
Right.
So that's her immediate goal, but the whole ending of this thing is actually completely scalable. They mentioned directly in there that depending on when you run this adventure, like what rank the player characters are, she can be a demon prince all the way up to a greater daemon of Slaanesh. So it depends on just where the characters are when this completes, how powerful she is, and what she's off to go do.
So I think we were probably, had we gone after her, would have been up against a demon prince.
Yeah, I was thinking that's right about in that area.
Because we're all like rank 2.5.
Yeah. So that's where I was going to scale her to. So still an incredibly powerful threat if you were to go in and try and have a direct confrontation, but she's already sort of taken on a new mask and is hiding. And
I think that would have been the most powerful creature we'd fought.
And our hand was definitely kind of forced with how bad we were shaken up, right?
So. Yeah, I think I liked how we ended it. It was kind of like the good guys won, but they didn't really win. And it was kind of this like sad, anticlimactic ending, which was like,
it's a very familiar feeling.
It felt so Warhammer as opposed to like running off in the sunset after like
the glory, right?
It was. I liked that. I was really happy just to go and sit at the bar and just like be silent
survived.
For a while. Yeah, nobody talked. We just sat there.
Yeah, and it was a fitting end. And I'm opening the module right now and just looking. It's essentially a page and a half of open ends for the way that this can kind of wrap up. So they mentioned Kalsidra and say, you know, it could be that the players want specifically to avoid her and go somewhere else, or they want to fight or, you know, have a confrontation. So there's a little paragraph about scaling and dealing with that confrontation, but it's literally a paragraph in the book. So if you want to do that, it's completely up to the individual GM. There's no stats. There's just a
That's
comment.
Kind of nice. I like that.
There's a little comment to reference back to the, you know, the monster book.
Well, this adventure as a whole felt really open-ended to begin with, which is one of the reasons I was terrified to run it and why I was hoping you would. you know, it had so many plot lines that mixed at several points that could happen at any given point in time, mm-hmm. that it was really just a kind of a quite a load to kind of handle at once.
Yeah, you've really got to have a big picture of where you're going, you know, like what the whole story is doing, because things are unfolding even if the players aren't participating.
Movers and shakers.
Suitors are making progress.
So describe for the listeners how that mechanic works, because I read the adventure long before we actually played it, so I was somewhat familiar with it but had forgotten very key elements in it, so okay. I think I had a pretty fresh experience. However, I do recall there being a pretty interesting system behind how those guys are handled.
Yeah, so essentially there are like four simultaneous tracking bars going on, and each of them has three, you know, high points that once a certain series of events have occurred, you'll hit that event, and it actually, once that happens, catches all of them up. It sort of like speeds all the other timelines up to that point, but it's a matter of who gets there first and why, sort of thing. So what's happening is, because of the spell that Kalsidra has placed upon all the various suitors, they become more and more obsessed with whatever tick or quirk that they have, that sort of focus of their personality. So, you know, Leopold begins, you know, becoming more and more deranged about his poetry and losing contact with the outside world to the point of walking into harm's way, as we saw with him getting run over by the cart. So as things continue to progress, those obsessions and behaviors become more and more pronounced. So, you know, Guthrie becomes more and more violent. The pranks from
Maximilian
become more and more vicious, to the point of, you know, if any of these ever make it to the final part of the counter, they start becoming deadly. You know, he'll commit a deadly prank on somebody to kill someone to show Esmeralda just how much he cares, you know, what a clever prankster he is. And,
but then, so the having one of the PCs become one of the suitors is not a required element of the adventure.
This is another one of those interesting things that in this module is covered in a single paragraph. There's a little bit of advice that says the PCs may wish to go off and court Esmeralda herself as a means of preventing any of the suitors from winning her charms. And so it's sort of a conscious decision to go do that. What ended up happening is, when you rolled two chaos stars, I decided to go ahead and spin that. So that was completely sort of my own twist on the seed that had been dropped in the book. Because in order for you to have ever become obsessed the way you did, you would have had to have stood before the mirror and looked into the mirror. There was a way to have that happen if certain things progressed with Esmeralda. If you started showing, you know, interest, she would invite you up. You look into the mirror, and now Zappo, you get the whammies put on you.
It made sense. Using magic sight to look at...
Yeah, I figured you opened yourself up to it and the influence of Kalsidra. I kind of looked at it as actually Slaanesh going, oh, I'm going to have a little fun with this guy, and put the whammy on.
I had a blast playing that role. That was a lot of fun, because I didn't even know what to do with it at the beginning until it just kind of took on a mind of its own as the situation evolved.
And so on the tracker, it gave advice for if a PC becomes hit with this, you know, the spell, the infatuation with Esmeralda, that the PC quirk is to become obsessed with whatever activity they're doing. So regardless of what their character archetype, it would be to become obsessed with any current activity, and the obsession becomes worse and worse and more difficult to break away from. So that's why it started off with only like one difficulty for you to stop flipping through a book or something, but then it turned into two once all the trackers moved up to two. And as we got further and further, it was going to become more and more difficult for you to stop doing anything.
I liked how that played out, and that played out really well.
And, you know, and so, yeah,
you throw some little train of thought out there, and he's like, oh, really? Let's go with that.
And I turned all the dwarves into murderers.
So how does Conrad feel about Esmeralda now that he's successfully courted her?
Yeah, I hadn't really considered what happens after the adventure so much as, excuse me, going back into the tavern and kind of like... but
she's with us technically right now, right?
I guess she is, huh?
And again, the little sort of closing blurb for Esmeralda is, well, the PCs may see her as chaos tainted and kill her, end of story, or they may feel for her, and essentially she's got full memory of everything that happened. She just doesn't realize that it was because there was a spell. She thinks everybody just fell in love with her. So now it's like, if you like drop the rock on her and let her know, well, they weren't really.
You're that, not all that.
That could crush her ego, but there's any number of ways that can go.
I mean, I have a feeling our group is leaving town soon. So we're just going to disappear one night and stop paying rent.
Nothing left, right? I mean, her family's
been
decimated,
tortured to death, and didn't have much of a fortune.
Coming from a broke estate anyway,
Well, what is you know, everybody having now completed the adventure, which is supposed to be kind of the social adventure, or at least the adventure that accompanies the social elements of the game. Nate, do you want to start off and kind of give us your final thoughts?
It was very difficult. Yeah, lots of moving parts. Hard to keep track. Yeah, and it just felt like another one of those neutral victories, I think, overall, again, for us, but we're getting used to that. plague bears running around, dressed like clowns, and whatever else. I don't know.
So a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being best adventure ever played.
I liked it. I think it was a 7 or an 8. It was
And it's not necessarily a reflection of Chris's ability to GM the adventure, but like as an adventure as a whole, and it's fun. 7,
I think,
right?
I'd give it an 8. It was pretty good. It was engaging, and it kept you guessing. And, you know, the way that Chris ran it, I thought it was good.
Cool. Dave, what'd you think?
Well, for me, I saw it a little differently. I mean, yes, there were times where it was a little hard to keep track of things. At times I felt it was kind of slow compared to other modules we played. And I kind of liked more, you know, we didn't do any fighting. So there was that aspect of it that made it feel that different. This is more of an intellectual thinking puzzle versus a lot of action on our part.
We did fight some Skaven, and we've confirmed they exist.
Yeah,
that was a narrative battle,
and that was handled through narrative. You're right.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because the module, I guess, even opens the door in a couple of places for people that may have a more action oriented play style, but for the purposes of what we were doing in trying to run this specifically for a podcast, I elected to either narrate our way out of the Skaven battle, or there was an option literally in like a 3-sentence little blurb about an entire potential battle with the goblins in the clearing trying to protect Leopold. But the combat would have taken so long, it would have added an entire session just fighting goblins, I think, just to run that. But I think in a more sort of a freestyle campaign, if you're just running this on a weekly group and you wanted to do that as sort of a way to break things up, it presented an opportunity, but it is fully undeveloped in the module. It's just presented as there can be a big fight in the clearing with goblins, see book X, you know, for goblin stats. And so there's no information for the GM to go do that in the book itself because of the nature of the module, but it's sort of a seed for, hey, if you need some combat and you want people to go bash some goblin heads, here's a good place to go do it. And I elected to just have them pursue you, and because it said they were spouting bad poetry, I just ad-libbed all that because I figured I can do bad poetry.
No, and I think Chris handled it really well.
So on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think?
Maybe a 5 or 6.
My thoughts on it are, I liked how they handled. I really enjoyed the mechanic of watching these four guys get progressively more insane, and having read the adventure from the GM's perspective, that whole their devolution was, I think, the most interesting part of the adventure. But unfortunately, you only get to see a sliver of what is available depending on how things, you know, transpire.
Right.
And that part was really disappointing, not seeing the other things I know were potentially available.
Right.
I don't think there's really a solution to that. It's just, you know, however the dice roll, those are the parts you get to see. And I think this adventure, like, reading it through is really, really interesting. I think some elements don't translate as well to actual play because you don't get the full breadth of the story.
Right.
But I do like how they... It was paced interestingly. It felt like it could be a tremendously long adventure if you actually played out every part that's written. Maybe too long for always staying within the city, with the exception of one little jaunt out. And I felt that the encounter with the actual Slaanesh itself was far too brief for my taste. I kind of, you know, this is the Slaanesh adventure, and we really only get to play with it for 5 minutes at the end.
Mm-hmm. 3 days of dealing with the effects of Slaanesh, but direct confrontation.
Yeah, and I really was hoping for more there. And in best case scenario, you only see one demonette. You don't get to see the Seekers or the other, you know, you don't get to see some, like, you know, Bordello or something, or like some other, like, you know, guy obsessing with painting or food, and, you know, or something cool like that that, like, really just accentuates the obsessive nature of,
right,
Slaanesh. So I mean, I guess I give the adventure, I think, probably a 5 or a 6. It was okay. It was fun. I think you did a great job running it, but the adventure itself, I thought, was just okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I gotta say, from running it, that's the way I approached it too, is that depending on what path the players decide to take and how they choose to engage all of these different characters, I mean, I could see some groups coming in and going, you know, oh, we'll just bonk them on the head and drag them into the sewers so they don't, you know, pursue Esmeralda anymore. It can make the adventure really short, you know. But if you... I also don't think it was necessary to try and shoehorn in all the parts. It was like, okay, let's let the PCs pursue the ones that they find interesting. And so you guys kind of, you know, glommed onto Leopold at first at the very beginning. And so we kind of got a little more of him than maybe some of the others. And we got just a little bit of...
Because we only got like the fourth tracking meter of Leopold, right?
Yeah.
Which was him committing suicide.
And because Guthrie died.
And because Guthrie died.
So the way that played out was definitely sort of an option in the book, but because of the way you were handling things and the Skaven encounters, another one of those, here's two sentences, and if you want Skaven, please see Edge of Night kind of thing. And so I, you know, I took that out and ran with it, but it was kind of narrated. In, you know, it's part of the module that, you know, he goes down into the sewers and pursues the critter. And it's sort of a, well, you can run this any way you want. He can find... Skaven as the critter, he can find the pig, he can find nothing, and you know, there's a lot of different ways to run it. So they give you a lot of options, and then it's sort of just like, hey, let's play it the way that it seems to best fit the group and what's going on in the situation. But yeah, so we really kind of lost Maximilian in the shuffle. We got a little bit of focus on the burger, but we really kind of got, you know, the majority of the story for Leopold and Guthrie to a point. So we kind of got to put the spotlight on a couple of them and lost a couple in the...
I feel we lost Maximilian. Yeah. I just recall some of their fourth tier going crazy actions were pretty fun or unique or like...
Yeah.
Have been interesting to deal with.
And I got to be honest that I thought that Maximilians were potentially the most derailing because they could become dangerous and what were listed as potential pranks always seemed almost like overt attacks, and I could just see it instigating a fight in the middle of what was supposed to be sort of a social adventure that could have easily spun into a combat situation depending on the way the group perceived the situation in front of them, you know. It's like, oh, this guy's about to murder innocent civilians, charge, and now you're murdering, you know, Maximilian and kind of invalidating your contract. And it just was one of those. That one I thought was sort of, it almost was like goading the players into doing something they shouldn't in terms of like fulfilling the adventure's contract.
Fair enough. So from a GM's perspective, scale of 1 to 10.
I'm going to say it was a 7 because I thought it was a challenge. So for me, it was a lot of fun because I did know all the things that were going on. So I'm kind of thinking about them going on in the back of my head, you know, that there are tracks progressing without you taking notice. And so they're still advancing and people are still trying to see Esmeralda while you're off in the sewers with Guthrie. And, you know, those things are going on. So it's interesting to run. You know what I mean? For the GM, you have to find your satisfaction from the game sometimes differently than the players do. And so it's like I'm seeing the whole story unfold and how you guys are participating in it. And I guess I don't necessarily find the ending too disappointing from my perspective, because I guess it was more of a... It was just a different spin on what does chaos mean in the old world. It's not always rampaging armies and hordes of monsters. Sometimes it's a demon messing with the whole town's population and then getting away with it.
Bringing down the power structure of, you know...
Yeah, and then slipping off into the darkness, unfound and disguised once again. And there's the horror, is that we now know this horrible thing capable of dissecting an entire family has slipped off into the darkness somewhere.
Fair enough. Well, with that, let's get geared up for our next adventure. I think we're going to run Crimson Rain, which is the Khorne adventure.
Grom smash.
Grom is making his miraculous appearance. So till next time, guys, thanks for listening. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chris.
All right.
Appreciate it.
And we're out.